Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking how to travel lots on a little with Nomadic Map.
If you are ready to do some traveling after being cooped up for over a year, then this episode is for you. Today, we're talking with Matthew Kepnes, who is better known as Nomadic Matt. Before he turned 23, Matt hadn't taken a single trip overseas, but since then he's visited over 100 countries and territories. He's tried some crazy foods, and he has made lifelong friends along the way. He's the New York Times best-selling author of How to Travel the World on $50 a Day. And his mission now is to help would-be travelers realize that they actually can travel and that they can do it all for less money than they think that it'll take. Matt teaches folks all about affordable travel, ranging from topics like how they can save money by finding affordable flights, all the way to like advice too on like picking out a good backpack. And so we're excited to talk with him today, and we're going to convince you that it is possible to travel on a budget. Matt, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Matt, we're glad to have you, man. And, you know, my co-host Matt and I, we drink a craft beer on every episode. It's going to get confusing here. There's two Matts on today's show. But yeah, the reason we do that is because we like to splurge on something that we care about in the here and now while we're trying to save and invest for the long haul. So yeah, what's your craft beer equivalent? And you can't say travel.
Sushi.
Sushi. All right. I like it.
I'm assuming you've had some of the best sushi in the world. have you spent a fair amount of time in Japan?
Yeah, I've been to Japan about 3 times, and I did eat a lot of sushi while I was there.
Very nice. So, all right, first, we want to kick off the interview. Where in the world are you currently right now, and what are some of your most recent spots that you've been to, Matt?
Well, I'm currently doing a road trip around the U.S. Because of COVID, it's kind of hard to go internationally still. And so I am doing a 6-week road trip around the U.S., hitting all the national parks I haven't seen before. And I'm currently in Boise, Idaho, and I just came from Utah, which is, I hadn't really explored before this, and it was gorgeous. I especially liked Bryce National Park.
Yeah, Bryce Canyon's beautiful, man. I was there one time right after it snowed. So like the peaks of the canyon, I forget what the Jutes, whatever they're called, were like snow-capped. It was just gorgeous. So That sounds like a good spot to be in right now, Matt. I wanted to ask you too, just kind of a random question. I saw you tweeting the other day about Waffle House. Do you have like a favorite like food chain or like national chain that like feels like home maybe that you go to sometimes when like, I don't know, maybe you're missing friends and family? Does Waffle House kind of do that for you?
Waffle House all day, every day.
I'm with you, man.
Give me those.
what's your go-to order?
There you go. I'm a big fan of the All-Star breakfast. I mean, you can't go wrong there.
Yeah, dude. Especially too, having gone to Waffle House. So we've got a local spot here, homegrown, and it's, you know, not unlike Waffle House. It's just local.
It's our local better version of Waffle House. So next time you're in Atlanta,
but you can't
come hit that.
You
up.
Can't beat the price of Waffle House, though. I mean, that's true. One of the amazing things. Like, we went there with our whole family one time, and it was like, you know, in the 20s. So I was like, oh my gosh, I can.
And Matt's got a big family.
Yeah, so. There's 6 of us now. So Matt, dude, let's talk about the pandemic, right? COVID, like you mentioned, it's of course seriously messed up travel. How much have you been able to travel during the pandemic? Has that basically been on hold since last March?
Last summer, I went on a road trip, again, up to see my parents in Boston, and I was in Mexico for 6 weeks near the end of 2020, but that's been the extent of my travels. Given the situation, I just don't think it's right to move around a lot, so a road trip, camper vans, that stuff, I mean, you're pretty safe, right? You're by yourself, you're cooking your own meals, you know, you're not interacting with a lot of people, especially as we do this, vaccination rates are just through the roof. So, you know, it's much safer than it was, you know, in the summer of 2020. But even then, you know, if you're going hiking and all that, I think that's fine. Beyond that, I was just a little hesitant to be encouraging travel to destinations that didn't have a handle on COVID. And I was just, I know I'm fine because of the precautions I take, but I don't know, you know, what you two do. Like, you two might not be as safe as I am or whatever. And so just factoring in that.
Yeah, it's tough when you got a mass audience and you don't know, you know, they're all going to take different tacks towards, safety. And so it's hard to give like blanket advice, right?
Right. And I mean, I don't think travel is inherently bad, right? You know, or even was last year. You know, there are ways to travel safe. But I think that should be sort of kept domestically in your own country rather than going to another country and maybe being an asymptomatic spreader or getting stuck. I mean, there, you know, French Polynesia was open for a while, and then France closed their borders. And since French Polynesia is part of France, they had to shut their borders too within like a day. So if you were there, you had to scramble to get out, or you were you weren't going anywhere. And so with the frequency of border closures and just the situation changing so quickly all the time, I think it was just better if you were going to do any travel just to do it domestically.
Yeah, totally. So, but like, as you know, you mentioned vaccinations way up. What do you think? How much has COVID changed the way we're going to travel in the near term future? As maybe, you know, the European Union does say, all right, we're going to reopen for visitors. Like, what are you starting to tell your readers as travel restrictions do start to lift in other parts of the world?
You know, many parts of the world are open, and many parts of the world will open up if you're vaccinated. Europe being an example of that. If you're vaccinated, you'll be able to go there. So I strongly encourage people to get vaccinated if they want to travel, especially to Europe. However, if you don't, there will be countries that, you know, Mexico, for example, doesn't care one way or the other, it seems. And so I'm pro-vaccine, but I also grew up, you know, working in healthcare, so I trust these things generally. But for those who are, you know, adamant that I refuse to get a vaccine, well, they're just going to be locked out of many countries in the world. It's just that simple. You know, they're not going to Asia. They're not going to Australia. They're not going to New Zealand. They're not going to most of Europe. They won't go to a lot of Caribbean or Pacific Island countries. And that's just what they're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt, so you mentioned working in a hospital. That's what you were doing back in 2006, right? And you were going back to get your MBA, but then you decided to take a gap year. And so let's talk about just how you got into travel. What led you to quit your job and to essentially dedicate your life to travel?
Back, as you mentioned, I was working in healthcare. I was in hospital administration. It was a really boring job. And I had decided to leave, do an MBA, and go work in the corporate world. And so prior to that, back in 2005, I took my vacation. I went with a friend to Thailand. And I met backpackers. I never met, you know, such a creature before. You know, people who just traveled and could do so on a budget. And so I was just fascinated by these people. You know, in America growing up, it's, you know, hotels and expensive tours and resorts and Disney and cruises. And here were all these people my age just traveling. Every day was like the weekend. They had no plans. They seemed to be able to do it on very little money. And I was just fascinated by it. I was like, this is what I want. So I decided that I'd go home, I'd quit my job, I know I would finish the MBA. And then before I follow the American dream of career, you know, marriage, house, kids, that whole jam, I'd go do a year around the world and, you know, get it out of my system. Well, a year turned into 18 months, came back in 2008, broke. doing a temp job, and I realized actually I want to go back and travel. So I started the blog as maybe a online resume where maybe I could, like, you know, do some freelance writing. But then I called up, I was working in Thailand before I came home as an English teacher, and I called up that office and they're like, yeah, come on back. So I went back in the fall with really one goal, was just to keep traveling. There were no grand plans or anything like that. I just wanted to keep going. That was it, like one more day, right? And one thing led to another, and by 2010, the website was my job. I just sort of stumbled into it, and here we are 11 years later.
There you go. Yeah, you truly are a nomad at this point, right? 11 years of travel. But
15 years of travel.
Oh, 15 years total?
Professionally, right? 11 years, you know, professionally writing.
Okay. All right. But to in order to leave your job, you had to save up money to feel good about being able to do that, right? To be able to actually like afford the plane tickets and get on the road. So how much money did you save before quitting your job? And then like what were some of the biggest cuts that you made in order to like accelerate that timeline of being able to get on the road?
I saved $30,000. $20,000 was for the trip. $10,000 was for when I came home. But since I spent another 6 months overseas, that ate into a lot of that home fund. So, you know, I worked a lot of overtime. Being in the hospital, there were a lot of shifts I could take beyond my 9 to 5. So that was one thing I did to really jumpstart my bank account. But, you know, I saved for 3 years doing this because I, you know, had started working when I graduated college in 2003 and I left in 2006. So that was 3 years of savings and overtime. And didn't eat out, didn't go out drinking as much. Once I made the decision to leave, I basically had 18 months to get to where I needed to be. And so, you know, I was more than halfway there already just from saving money. But to get the rest of the way, I moved in for the last few months with my parents. You know, so saved on rent. I lived a very monastic life.
Spartan existence.
Yeah, because the goal was, you know, I can go out to see a movie and the popcorn and all that, you know, that's $20-$30. Well, that's a day and one more day in Thailand. And so by always framing it in that, like, do I want to give up one day of travel to do this? Most of the time the answer was no.
And I just made those decisions home. A little bit easier to make. It felt less like depriving yourself and more like actually funding your future exploration.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, I made a couple of grand by selling all my possessions before I left. And there we go.
Very cool. If someone is thinking through this and they're like, man, that sounds like something, you know, I'd be interested in doing, what advice do you have for any new or just maybe any aspiring travelers out there?
I think it's important to come up first with your own budget. Where do you spend your money on? Most people have no idea where they spend their money. And so if you can track your expenses for a month, you'll probably find a lot of low-hanging fruit you can cut to save. And so I think once people get a better handle on their finances, it allows them to see, oh wait, maybe I can do this. Because I mean, think of all the money you spend in a month that you don't even think about. Your Starbucks, that water you bought, that snack you bought, even, you know, the money you give to a homeless person, the glass of wine you got during happy hour as you read, like just little things like that. Suddenly you're like, wow, I spent a lot of money. A Lyft, the scooter, the e-scooter you get because you're too lazy to walk, right? I'm amazed at how much money I spend a year on Lyft. Last year, I was like, I bought a car and I still managed to spend hundreds of dollars. What was the point of getting the car?
Yeah.
You know? So when you're like confronted with those numbers, you're like, oh, okay, now I need to make a change. Because especially when everything's easy on an app, right? And you don't really think about the money you're spending. You just tap and go.
That's interesting that your first advice to an aspiring traveler is to look at your budget. Like, obviously, you know, this is a money show, so we're with you, but that's I find that fascinating that that's your initial advice that you'd give somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it just points out, I mean, what I hear you saying, Matt, is that you can travel. It's just you've got to make other changes in your life if that's something you actually want to do. Like, it's more possible than you realize, but instead you're kind of just moving along, doing the normal things that we as Americans do, spending money, you know, on a glass of wine while reading a book, catching a Lyft in order to meet up with some friends, things like that. And all that, yeah, all that costs money. And putting it in the perspective of how much time is this going to cost me if I am traveling abroad? Like, that's just a perfect way to think about it. That's just the proper context. And so we're actually going to talk more about some of the practical steps that we can take when it comes to reducing the amount of money that it takes to live on when you are abroad, so that when you do go to the movies and get popcorn and you spend $30, that you truly do equate that with the cost of living of an entire day in a different country. So we're going to get to all those practical nuts and bolts right after the break.
We're back from the break. We're talking with Nomadic Matt. This dude knows how to travel. And let's dive into some of the practical nuts and bolts of how to travel so that it doesn't break the bank. And Matt, the title of one of your books says that you can travel for just $50 a day. That's really not that much money when you think about it, because I think most people are like, my hotel's going to cost a whole lot more than that, right? So yeah, does that $50 include transportation, like airfare, lodging, food, everything?
It includes everything. You know, it works out to $18,250 in a year. And you'll get people to be like, that sounds like so much money. But when you include it as everything and you compare it to like how much does your life in the States cost? Probably
a lot more than that.
Yeah. So it's not a lot of money when you think of it as like the total number you'll spend in a year. Give or take a few grand on either end, depending on where you go. Obviously, if you spend that year in Europe or Australia, it's going to cost more money than if you were to spend that year just, you know, around Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, Joel, you kind of mentioned airfare. Matt, you've got some great resources on your site that helps folks find a great deal on flights. What are some of the best ways to score a better deal on airfare? Because, I mean, I'm assuming that's the most expensive part of, say, getting to Southeast Asia is the plane ticket. So, yeah, how do you spend less money on that aspect of travel?
You want to be flexible. I think there's a couple of tips. First off, be flexible. Whether it's when you can go or where you can go, there's always deals around. I mean, last week, there were $200 round-trip flights to Japan.
I saw those pop up.
Yeah, for the end of the year into 2022. So if you're flexible with where you go and when you go, there's always a deal around. But if you have to go to Paris and you have to go July 12th, that's it. Well, then there's no magic voodoo that you can do to make the price of that flight on the 12th of July drop. It is what it is. But maybe if you go on the 13th or the 14th or the week later, it's less. Or maybe you don't go to Paris on July 12th. You go to Barcelona because that's where the deal is. And so, one, definitely be flexible. Two, sign up for deal newsletters like Scott's Cheap Flights or The Flight Deal, Secret Flying. Those websites, they find the deals for you and they take away a lot of that work. And then, you know, the biggest thing we can do, especially as Americans, is travel hack. You know, collect those points and miles for flights. You know, a credit card sign-up bonus alone, you know, which can be 50 to 100,000 points these days, that alone will get you an economy trip to Asia or really anywhere in the world in economy. And so using those points and accumulating them is the best way to get that cheap flight. You know, a lot of people think travel hacking is a scam. Oh, you know what? You have to spend that money. But most cards come with like point multipliers. You know, you get 4 points, you know,
right,
for gas and, you know, 3 points at restaurants and all that jazz. And so if it takes you a year to get a free flight, you know, it takes you a year. I mean, that's one of the things that I did when I did my first trip overseas. I had like a Citi card and they had thank you points and I used it for cash. And so that covered my leg from US to Europe and then Europe to Southeast Asia. So there's two flights just taken care of.
One of the other ways, Matt, I think what you're like most known for is like slow travel being one of the best ways to save money, and that slow travel is different than travel the way we currently think about it. You alluded to that a little bit earlier, but one thing it does mean is purchasing fewer flights in all likelihood. But how else does like slow travel actually benefit you and allow you to travel more cheaply than people typically think they're going to be able to?
Well, you're amortizing your costs over a longer period of time, right? So, you know, if you're going from Bangkok to Chiang Mai and then to Phuket, and then you continue south. If you're doing this every day or every few days, the trains, the planes, the buses, they really add up. Whereas if you just go, you know, a week here and then a week there, you're not spending as much on transportation because you're not visiting as many places quicker. You know, the faster you travel, the more it's going to cost money because the more transportation you're going to take.
Okay, so aside from transportation, like that's obviously a major cost when it comes to traveling abroad. I got to think affordable accommodations are probably next on the list when it comes to traveling for less. I'm assuming, Matt, that you're not staying at fancy 4-star hotels, right, or really nice Airbnbs most of the time. How are you able to get your accommodation costs low?
I do stay at lots of 4-star hotels.
Oh,
points.
You do?
Because point, you know,
oh, okay. That's
the
right.
Best accommodation is free accommodation. So again, points can really go a long way to lowering your costs. You can couch surf, which is, you know, you can stay with a local for free. It's a great website. Yeah, that's one thing I used a lot when I was traveling and can still use today. And there's a couple of other sites that are similar, like Be Welcome, Global Freeloaders, and ServUs. Hostels, I mean, hostels are not what you imagine them to be like. You know, they're not like dirty places that you see on like Eurotrip and all that. They've actually improved a lot over the last, you know, 15 years as your millennials start to travel and have demanded more services. You know, now they have tours, bars, restaurants, you know, Wi-Fi, especially as remote work has sort of the digital nomad thing became big in the 2010s, you know, they sort of improve themselves. And, you know, if you don't want to stay in a dorm room, hostels have private rooms. So there are options. I mean, obviously, you know, if you don't want to stay in the dorm, you don't want to couch surf, and you're like, I only want Airbnbs. Well, there's only so much you can do, right? I, you know, for me in Airbnb, I don't get my own place. I always stay in someone's guest room because to me, the point of Airbnb is to get to know the people you're staying with. But a room in someone's house is markedly cheaper than getting the whole apartment to yourself.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you're traveling with a group, it makes way more sense to get an Airbnb than it does for each of you to get a dorm room, right? Because if you add up all the costs individually, you're better off just getting your own place. But if you're a solo traveler, you know, hostels and couchsurfing are going to be the most cost-effective ways to, you know, lower your accommodation costs besides points.
So, yeah, what about that food budget? Because that's another one of those things. I think when people travel, they assume that they need to eat out twice or maybe even three times during that day.
Or especially like me, four times.
Or four times a day. You're like a hobbit. You eat meals at the pace of a hobbit. Second breakfast for Matt. like what are you doing to save on food costs? Because it does get really expensive if you're continually going out to eat as opposed to cooking on your own.
Right. Well, like, I think that's, you hit the nail on the head. You know, people assume you always have to eat out. But you don't have to eat out. I mean, you cook a lot when you travel. There's nothing wrong with cooking. People in the destination you're at, they don't eat out every meal. So why do you feel the need to eat out every meal? You know, go to the market, go to the supermarket, the farmer's market. If you really want to get a sense of what people are eating day to day, you're going to see that in all these, you know, in the grocery store, because that's going to be prime for the local appetite. They're going to sell things people buy. And so if you really want to get a cross-section of like, what do people eat in this country? Go to the market. But people don't eat out all the time. And so don't feel, I don't get why people feel the pressure to eat out every meal.
All right, practically on that. So when you are staying in a hotel, like, how are you cooking the food? What are you doing? Because there's not a, like, I guess I'm sure like when you're staying in the Airbnb, you have access to a stove. But if you're in a hotel, practically, how are you doing that?
Well, hostels have kitchens. So there you go.
Yeah. But
if I'm at a hotel, then it becomes a little more problematic. If I'm staying at a hotel, I'm probably eating out. Because if I'm staying at a hotel, I've used points. So my daily budget has more room in it for food. Because mm-hmm. accommodation that day is zero. But, you know, why does every meal have to be a hot meal? You can make a sandwich. So a lot of times, I don't eat breakfast. And so my day is sort of like, I will eat out one meal and I'll cook one meal. Depending on where I am and, you know, again, if do I have a kitchen or not, it could be lunch or dinner. If I'm eating out for lunch, you know, it's because I'm staying at a place where I can cook a hot dinner like pasta and or stir fry or something like that. If that is not the case, I'll eat out dinner and I'll just make myself a sandwich for lunch. But, you know, you're in Europe, right? Let's use Europe as an example. And you're in Paris or you're in Italy. There's all these fresh markets out there. That's what people do. They go get some fresh bread, cheese, and you know, meats, and that's their lunch. It should be your lunch too. And if you're in a country like, or a region like Southeast Asia, well, the street food is so cheap, you never cook it out because it's like $1 a meal.
Right. I know I had like one of the best meals of my life in Thailand. It was like literally like 95 cents or something like that. And it was this stir fry with shrimp. And I was like, you could live like a king in Thailand. You truly could. So I think, yeah, that $18,000 a year number, if you're living in Thailand, it might be more like 13 or something like that. It's so dirt cheap to be in Thailand.
Yeah. And Matt, hearing you talk about Paris. I mean, that's like some of the best memories I have when my wife and I, when we went to Paris. You know, we ate at some really nice restaurants, but some of the best memories we have, some of the best experiences were when we went to a bakery, we grabbed a fresh baguette, grabbed some cheese at a local market and some fruit, and we just went and had a picnic. We, yeah. Like that, plus some prosciutto or something like that for some meat. I mean, that held us over. You know, that was plenty for us to get through the rest of the day until it was time for dinner. So yeah, I'm totally with you there. Matt, we've got a few more questions for you regarding, you know, just planning for vacation, planning for travel, as well as just some of the different benefits that you've found, that you've gained from traveling the world. And we'll get to all of that right after this break.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking with Nomadic Matt. And Matt, obviously, you know, we just kind of covered slow travel and how you're able to kind of amortize, I think is the word you said, your expenses when you're traveling over a longer, slower period of time. A lot of our listeners might be saying, that sounds nice, Nomadic Matt, but I only get 3 weeks of vacation a year. So yeah, what are your tips for folks that have a normal job for maybe being able to fit in an extended trip like the kind of travel you're all about?
You know, I still think you can travel slow regardless of how long you go. You can't see as many destinations if you only have 3 weeks, but that doesn't mean you can't see one or two destinations deeply. And I think the travel style here in the States is, you know, more, 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 right? But when you're traveling, less is more. And so I always encourage people that, you know, I understand why people want to travel fast. You have 3 weeks a year, there's lots of places in the world to see, and you're just trying to maximize that vacation time. But, you know, again, if you're seeing 10 destinations in Europe, well, your transportation costs are going to go through the roof because you have to, you're always on the move. It's exhausting being on the move. And by the time you get back from your 3 week trip, you're really just going to remember being on the move. It's all going to seem like a blur. You're going to need a vacation from your vacation.
Of a train.
Yeah. And so, regardless of the amount of time you have, it's important, you know, to understand that in travel, less is more. And I strongly encourage people to, you know, to deep dive into places. You know, if you have 3 weeks, rather than go everywhere, pick like three or four places and just see them deeply. You'll have a much more memorable experience because you'll be able to spend time in those places making memories rather than just shuttling from the major tourist attractions and getting back on the train. It'll be cheaper and it'll be less exhausting because you can just, you know, you're not in a rush. And when you're not in a rush, you can allow for, you know, the serendipity of travel to happen where you can just walk out the door, you know, you get a couple of things you want to see and you let the rest of the day fill in. And that's when you do that, the things that fill in, they're usually the things you're going to remember more.
That's so true. Yeah, I mean, I know I found that in my travels. The things that we didn't necessarily plan for are the things I remember. Like
the things that happen by, like, happenstance, by chance.
Yeah, because you had time to. Like, specifically, Joel, when you and I, like, when we traveled to Ireland, I remember positioning you over some cow poop.
Matt, he forced my foot into...
No, I did not. I held you there, and then you just stepped in it. And no. I was like, why did you step in it?
That's not how it went down.
It was
messed up.
But we wouldn't have done that if we didn't just have, like, 30 minutes just on, you know...
Just
like
to mess around.
On this hike, on these cool rocks next to this field. Yeah. And like that still stands out in my mind as like one of the funniest things of all time.
Yeah, of course you remember these things more than you do, you know, the museum or anything else.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, some of my greatest memories are when I let the day fill itself in and I ended up very far from where I wanted to be. In the sense, like, I thought this is what I was going to do today and I ended up doing something else that was 10x better.
Yeah, I love that. That's for sure. Matt, you know, I've seen stories of some of like Instagram influencer couples that like break up after a year of being on the road together. Like traveling, it can be a lot of fun, but it can be pretty stressful as well. And so I guess this just makes me wonder, like, do you ever get tired of traveling yourself? You've been doing it now for, you know, over, you know, 15 years, 11 years professionally. Is this something that you still look forward to just with just as much energy as you used to, or is it something maybe you're getting tired of?
I wouldn't say I'm ever tired of travel. I love it as much as I did 15 years ago. Nice. But I definitely don't go away as long as I did 15 years ago. I mean, that first year was 18 months. Now, after like a month, I'm like, I want to go back to my bed. I am just tired. You know, sick of unpacking. I just want to be in one place. I also like my job. I love what I do. And the longer you're on the road, you know, it's really hard to balance work and travel. And so since I really primarily want to focus on travel, there's only so long I can push work to the side. And so, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to start working again. I'm ready to go back and just face plant into my bed. You know, travel burnout is real. Even if you are new to this, it's the first time you're going away, you've never traveled before, a few months into this, you're going to go, I'm really tired. I need to slow down. Because travel is work, right? Every day you wake up, you got to figure out your way around a new country. You got to make friends. You got to figure out where to eat. And then you got to pack up tomorrow, find the bus station, get to your next destination, make friends all over again, find a place to eat, find your way around the city. That's tiring because there's a lot of mental energy that goes into it. So
yeah,
travel burnout is real. And I always encourage people, if you're getting to that stage where you're sick of just moving and travel, stop. For me, I just go home because, you know, I'm not on the road. But if you're on this round the world trip, just wherever you are, stop. And just chill out in one destination for a week, 2 weeks, however long it takes until you decide, okay, I'm ready to go. And, you know, travel is not an unlimited wellspring. It's a battery that needs to be recharged.
So, and you've been traveling solo on most of these trips. Like, do you have any tips for like combating loneliness or developing meaningful relationships? Because it can be tough. Like when you're like, new city, new day, got to meet a new friend. What about developing community? That's something that's important. To Matt and I, we're very embedded where we live. I think that to me would be like the hardest part of kind of this travel lifestyle.
Again, this is why a lot of people stay in hostels, because you're surrounded by other travelers, right? Mm-hmm. So you can meet a lot of people. Going back to couch surfing, not only can you stay with people, through their app, there's always events going on, right? So there's always sort of community meetups, whether locals are running or just other travelers posting, hey, I'm going to go to this site tomorrow. Who wants to join? People join. I love meetup.com. You have hobbies. Chances are somebody in the destination you're going to, if it's a big enough city, enjoys that hobby too. So reach out to those groups and like see what's going on. Facebook groups, you know, those didn't exist when I started traveling around the world, but they do now, you know, so you can go in and type in, you know, expats in, you know, Oaxaca, and you can join the group and post like, say, hey, I'm visiting Oaxaca. Like, I'd love to like meet some people. There are ways to always meet people nowadays because the internet has really helped facilitate that. Right? Before, you know, you backpacked around the world, you met people through a hostel or just happenstance. Nowadays, there's all these apps and Facebook groups and websites that allow people to meet strangers. I remember going to meetup groups way back in the day, like 2003, 2004, when I moved to Boston after college. I moved home and was like, I need to meet people. And that was weird. You met people online, you hung out with strangers. Like, that was weird back then, right? You're like, mm-hmm. No, you know, it'd be like, I met my girlfriend online. People were like, oh, that's so weird. Nowadays, it's like,
it's normal.
You met somebody in real life? That's so weird.
Yeah,
that's like, true.
You guys met at a bar? What? That's so weird.
Yeah, that's the anomaly.
Right. Yeah. And so the same thing online. There's all these things, and it's, you know, couchsurfing meetup tomorrow. Okay, I'll just go to that and, you know, meet a bunch of strangers.
I like it. Well, Matt, like obviously, you know, you're such a huge fan of travel. It's a massively important part of your life. But traveling around the world, it may not be for everyone. And so how does someone know if it's just not for them, if they're just not necessarily cut out for travel, or if maybe they've just done a poor job at it? You know, you've kind of listed out some of the different ways that you could do travel incorrectly, how you can do it wrong. How does someone know whether or not they've just had a bad experience or if maybe travel's just not for them?
Well, I don't know if they've had a bad experience or how to know that, because that's so personal. I guess I'd have to like grade their paper, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
You're like, tell me, oh, you really messed that up, or you really messed that up. But how do you know if whether it's for you or not? You go, and you can always come home. And I think in our culture, it's like you have to finish what you start, right? clean your plate, read the whole book, watch the movie that you don't enjoy. You said you were going a year away, you have to go a year away. No, you don't have to do any of those things. If you're 3 months, 4 months into your trip, and you're like, oh, well, Matt said, if I'm feeling burnt out, just stop. And then you stop and you spend, you know, a couple of weeks in the destination, you're still burnt out and you're like, oh, one more week. You're still just really missing home. Go home. I met a lot of people who were just like, oh, I miss my friends, I miss my family. I gave it a go. I slowed down, I started again, just I couldn't shake this feeling that I don't need to go longer. You have nothing to prove. Travel is really just self-development. And so if you're going, you know, after you did 3 months and you're like, oh, that's it, go home. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with throwing in the towel if it's something that you don't like. It's just like, it's what the sunk cost fallacy, essentially, right? Just to say, I'm going to keep going because I've already committed to this. And I feel like we do that all the time with our finances, but then also with our time, like with the things that we commit to in life, when it's just as good of an idea sometimes to bow out and just to stop.
Travel is about having the ultimate flexibility, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I don't really like this destination, I'm leaving. Oh, I love this destination, I'm going to stay longer. Why not apply that ultimate flexibility to the trip as a whole? If you want to, if you're like, oh, I'm done. I mean, there were many times where, you know, I was supposed to stay in a place longer, and I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to go home. I've never once thought, oh, if only I had stayed longer. No, I was ready to go, and that was that. And so if you're, same thing. Don't fall into that sunk cost fallacy with your time or money, especially money.
We agree with you on that one, that's for sure. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this episode, man. Where can our listeners find out more about you and your advice on traveling cheaply?
Well, my website, nomadicmatt.com, NOMADICMATT, has all my resources there. But I am branded on all social media channels, Nomadic Matt. So whatever social media platform you love, /Nomadic Matt, you will find me.
Awesome. Nomadic Matt, thank you for coming on the show, man. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, Matt, that was a good combo with Nomadic Matt. Yeah. I love what he's brought to the space of slow travel over the years. I feel like he's one of those guys who just really influenced the space and has influenced how people travel, how people and how people can do it cheaply, because obviously that's what you and I are all about. So what was your big takeaway from that conversation?
Yeah, so specifically what he mentioned, a figure. He mentioned, I forget the exact figure, but he said 18,000 a year, 18,000 something.
$250 a year.
Was it really? $250? Yep. Okay. 18,000.
I wrote it down when he said it because I was like, that's very specific.
I wrote down the 18K, but I was listening to, I'm not very good at listening and taking notes. I'll just say that. But when he said that figure, dude, that made me realize there's individuals who take vacations, week-long vacations, 2-week-long vacations, and they'll spend that much money in just those 2 weeks.
Who are those people? And I want to slap them in the face.
In just those 10 days. And for him to mention that, that is what you can live on. You can survive and travel the world on that amount of money, and potentially even less if you're in Southeastern Asia because it's more affordable there. So that just really stood out to me because it highlighted the fact that it doesn't cost a ton of money to travel if it's a priority and if you're willing to travel in ways that aren't consumptive, right? Like the kind of travel that we see and the kind of travel that we're fed with, you know, via marketing, advertising, social media. It's like super high-end, fancy travel, like you're at a spa, you're sitting there in the infinity pool that looks out, you know, onto the Pacific, like that kind of thing.
A hot stone massage.
Yes. Or you're in like the
I know you're into those.
You're in one of the little huts, like you're in Tahiti, and you know, and it's like you're out in the middle of nowhere. It's like
riding a horse on the beach.
That's what a lot of times people imagine. But you can be there and you can experience the culture and the food and oftentimes in the weather, right? And those are the things that truly matter. And you can pay very little money or you can pay a ton of money and be at, you know, a resort where everything's basically spoon-fed to you and you don't have to do anything. And it's like he said, that's not what my life looks like here at home. Why not take the life that I live here in the States and apply that methodology, the way I go about living my days here, and do that just in a different country? And it's so true. Like, as he was talking through just like going out to eat, I mean, Kate and I, we go out to eat once every 2 weeks, you know, and it's our date night. It's a big deal. It's a special occasion. And so I'm totally, you know, we've done this before, but I think thinking through different ways. So I guess this is my second big takeaway, but thinking through ways to eat affordably when you're traveling, it doesn't, you don't have to constantly be going out to eat, eating at nice restaurants. I don't eat at nice restaurants here in Atlanta. I mean, rarely we do. Oftentimes I'm keeping things pretty simple. And so I don't know, that really stood out to me as well, that you don't have to spend a lot of money on food while you're traveling as well.
I think that number too stood out to me because I was like, man,
18,000?
You could just sell your 2017 Honda Accord and fund travel for a year. Like it's almost that simple.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who have that much value in a car. Yes. And if they say that they prioritize travel, sell your car and go do it. Like
that's
you can
an
do
asset
it.
That they have.
Yeah.
And like Matt said as well, he's like, why did I even buy a car once the pandemic hit and I came back to the States? I'm still catching a Lyft to a lot of places.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows we don't like cars all that much anyway.
You probably have one too many. Sell it and go travel for
that's
a little
true.
Bit. I think my big takeaway was that even, you know, with the kind of American style vacation time we have, where we don't necessarily have as large of chunks to go travel, there's still ways to do slow travel. And he said, like, visit one or two destinations and explore them deeply. And I thought that was a good concept, right?
Yeah, deep instead of wide.
Yeah.
I
appreciate that. And I think, too, one tact that you can take is to take all of your vacation maybe in one lump time. So if you have 3 weeks of vacation, attempt to take most of it in one time, like at one time, so you can literally get 21 days in a row somewhere. Mm. That's a way to then be able to explore deeply. You're buying one plane ticket and sometimes two vacations. Like it can take a little while before you feel disconnected from your work and all the responsibilities of everyday life. So I think when you take 2 or 3 weeks off, it's actually better for you mentally. Whereas if you take 3 1-week vacations, it's a little bit harder to get away. You feel like you come back so quickly. And so, yeah, maybe attempt to take a larger chunk of time off so that you can explore more deeply and disconnect, you know, a little bit more.
Yeah, I like that, dude. That's a good strategy that you gleaned. Let's shift gears. Let's get back to the beer that you and I enjoyed on this episode. You and I shared a Canela Oscuro. I think that's how you say it.
Oscuro?
Oscuro. No, is that an R or an A? Oh, maybe it's an R. Is it Oscuro? I bet you're right.
That's an R.
The font is written so that it looks just like the A, though. Look at it. It looks exactly like the A.
It does.
But this is a beer by Southern Grist Brewing Company. And, dude, this was a really good beer. This is a milk stout that was brewed with, obviously, lactose. That's what makes it a milk stout. But it also had cinnamon, vanilla, cocoa nibs, and chili peppers. Dude, anytime I've got a good stout that has some that's bringing the heat, that's got some peppers in it, it automatically gets upgraded by like 0.5 on my Untappd rating. But this one was really good. You can immediately feel the tingle of the heat on your tongue. But this is one I really enjoyed. Plus, it had a nice little sweetness going on with that vanilla. This is just a well-rounded, good example of a Mexican-style stout.
Yeah, this was by Southern Grist. They make great beers. And this one, they said they modeled it after Mexican hot chocolate. And it had that vibe, right? It had that like sweetness from the milk. It had that like cinnamon going on. And it had the peppers bringing a little bit of that heat.
Mm.
This was a delightful example of that style. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
There are certain beers that you and I have on the show. And we're kind of like, yeah, I'm glad we shared that one. This is one where if we each had our own, I would have been more than happy to enjoy all 16 ounces of it.
Yeah, this one was really, really good.
So good. But yeah, man, that's going to be it for this episode. We'll make sure to link to Nomadic Matt's website, but nomadicmatt.com. He really does have a lot of great resources up there on his site. But of course, you can find our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. That's going to do it for this episode, though. So until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.